Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This presidential election has been, I don't know, insert your hyperbolic yet emotionally accurate descriptor here. Mine would be unprecedented, wild, dismaying, thrilling, infuriating, dramatic, maybe even Shakespearean. Here's Trevor Noah's recent revelation on The Daily Show last night.
And at the same time, the story is so Shakespearean. You know, think about it. Hillary survives Bill's sex scandal, but now gets a scandal from her top aide's husband, and it was Bill who married them. Not to mention that Trump got his sex scandal from Billy Bush, whose uncle was defeated by Hillary's husband before Trump later defeated his cousin Jeb. There are only like 15 characters in the entire story.
Well, in reality, William Shakespeare was as an acute political observer as they come. So we thought it high time to welcome back one of our favorite guests, the brilliant and delightful Tina Packer. She's founding artistic director. Hi, she's listening. Of Shakespeare and Company in Lenox, Massachusetts. She's also author of the book Women of Will, and she joins us today from New England Public Radio in Springfield. Tina Packer, I meant every word of it. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Meghan. And I have to say, the music that you played in the intermission, that was the music I used for Julius Caesar. So that was the point they were putting down Caesar's body onto the ground after he'd been stabbed to death. So you evoked it for me. And then what your previous guest was just saying is so true. You know, there are 20 characters and they all keep on repeating and the same mistakes get made over and over again. Even the piece before, Meghan, in fact, I was listening to the law case.
About Gary Lee Sampson, yeah.
That's right. And Jack Cade, who's a usurper in the Henry VI plays, the first thing he says is, first thing we'll do, let's kill all the lawyers. Ugh. Because we do not want to take things to law where they're going to try and sift through them, you know.
Yeah. So there's much to discuss here, Tina Packer.
So much.
I mean, let me just jump in here because some of our listeners are probably wondering, music, what are you talking about? Because a lot of people on the radio don't actually get to hear that interstitial music. That's all but. That's okay. But you know what we're going to do? Since you mentioned it, I'm going to have our engineer, Tim, put it on our website at radioboston.org so they can actually listen to that little bit of music to hear what you're talking about and the connection of Julius Caesar.
Good.
Okay, so everyone will understand that. Now, to the presidential election, is it fair to call this battle royale Shakespearean?
Oh, it's not only fair, it's almost a place you can go for some sanity within the whole struggle. I don't know about you and your listeners, but I go to bed every night more anxious than I was the day before.
I think there's a lot of that going around.
I can't believe that we're talking about some of the things we're talking about when, you know, Syria is blowing up and the economic problems are so enormous and we get no actual talk about how we might right our economic problems or how we might deal with the refugees. We just get slagging off, as we call it in England. We slag each other off and insult each other and we get no substance, and that increases my anxiety. Yeah. And I keep on thinking Donald Trump has not thought about how he's going to do it. Hillary's overthought it and she probably can't put it into, you know, one or two sentences so everybody can get it.
So if you had to name one character from the canon that reminds you most of Donald Trump, who would it be?
Oh, well, it is this Jack Cade, who most of your readers probably don't know. But he's in the Henry VI plays, and he's an outsider who decides he wants to be king. And he says, I'm brave and I'm valiant, and you've got to believe that I'm rich and I can endure much and I'm not frightened of sword or fire. He says all these things, therefore follow me. And the first thing we'll do, we'll kill all the lawyers. And then the next thing that we'll do is that we will make sure that you know, the water is wine, so everybody can have enough to drink, and we're not going to have any money, and I'm going to support everybody. And he just goes on and on about all the things he's promising and arouses them in their misery, because they have been put down and have been fighting civil wars and things, to just go and kill people indiscriminately. Now, I'm not saying Donald Trump is saying kill people indiscriminately, but that idea of she should be dead or put her in jail or believe me, I'd blow them all up. Mm. All that indiscriminate description, which arouses people's emotions, is exactly what Jack Cade does.
Well,
people do it too. Richard III does it.
I have to say that we were looking at some of the dialogue from Henry VI Part Two, as you mentioned, and if you just sort of changed the high theatrical English of the 16th century and put it in modern day words, it seems eerily similar to things
Isn't
that Donald
it?
Trump has
Isn't
said.
It?
I mean, I'm looking at a line from Jack Cade where he says, "I thank you, good people. There shall be no money. All shall eat and drink on my score, and I will apparel them all in one livery, and they may agree like brothers and worship me their lord."
I mean, absolutely.
Donald Trump stood at the Republican National Convention and said, "I alone can solve the problems."
I know. And doesn't tell you how he's going to do it, but uses emotional triggers to get everybody to think, yes, he understands our plight. And then off he goes. And the desire for a big daddy who's going to solve us all, you know, has always, always been the bane of politicians' existence, really.
Well, what was Shakespeare trying to say with the character of Cade?
I think he was trying to say that you have got to have an equal balance of reason and sanity, and you've got to let people know that you know how they feel. And of course, one of the great things about Shakespeare is he's very good at writing emotional language and touching people, but he's also very good at the reason. But if you take Julius Caesar, for instance, in that, Brutus says, "Listen to me and awake your senses that you might the better judge. And I killed Caesar, even though I loved him, even though I thought he was a great warrior. I killed him because he wanted to be king, and you would all be unfree if he became king." Now, which would you rather? Would you rather be unfree, or would you rather have Caesar be your... Caesar dead. Mm. And they all reason it through and they think, yes, we'd rather Caesar were dead. Mark Antony comes on and says, "I'm not going to try and disprove what Brutus said, but I have to tell you he was my friend, faithful and just to me. And do you remember how he gave you all that money and sold the captives and put it in your coffers? Do you remember how he shielded us against the whole world?" And then he shows them the dead body, and then he shows them the blood, and by this time they're all weeping and howling. And then doesn't take him very long to start saying, "Okay, follow me and we're going to avenge this," and they all scream through the streets, "Avenge, avenge." So, you know, Brutus is too reasonable, which I think Hillary often is, too reasonable, and then she tries to be emotional, but she doesn't know how to she doesn't know how to use her emotion in her voice, so she always really fails about this. Whereas Donald Trump knows perfectly well how to arouse everybody that he talks to if they don't care about the reasoning behind it. You know, if it to them, they know they're hurting and they want somebody to know they're hurting.
Well, we have a little bit of tape here from the 1953 movie version of Julius Caesar, just to give people a sense of the dialogue a little.
Yes.
So here's a moment where Brutus is speaking, this time around played by James Mason.
"Hear me for my cause and be silent that you may hear. Believe me for mine honor, and have respect to mine honor that you may believe. Censure me in your wisdom and awake your senses that you may the better judge."
Ah, you may the better judge.
Yes.
Well, and then Mark Antony in the same film was played by the one and only Marlon Brando.
"Oh, Desmond, thou art led to brutish beasts, and men have lost their reason.
Bear with me, my heart is in the coffin there with Caesar, and I must pause till it come back to me."
And he weeps.
Yeah.
And everybody else starts weeping.
I have to say that first part of that line, "brutish beast and men have lost their reason," seems to ring so true.
It does.
So we're speaking with Tina Pecker. She's founding artistic director of Shakespeare and Company in Lenox, Massachusetts. She's author of the book Women of Will. We're talking to her about how the political observations of William Shakespeare in the 16th century may ring ever more true today in 2016. A couple minutes ago, we were discussing how the character of Jack Cade in Henry VI, Part Two, reminded Tina Pecker something of the Republican presidential nominee. Is there a particular character that evokes Hillary Clinton for you?
Well, I think the woman who appears in Shakespeare's plays the most, to some respect, she's in four plays. No other character is in four plays. That's exactly like Hilary. Hilary was there 30, 40 years ago and is still there. You know, longevity. Yeah. I will take the long picture. In fact, Margaret is far more passionate herself than Hilary is. But when Hilary, you know, but Hilary is just as brave as the Duke of York, who is her great enemy, who wants to be king and knock Henry VI off the throne. But Margaret will do whatever it takes to knock the Duke of York down, and she captures him herself on the battlefield, you know, and then she says, I've got you in my power now, and was it you that would be England's king? Was it you that revelled in our parliament and made a preachment of your high descent? You know, in other words, he was boasting about how well born he was. Where are your mess of sons to back you now? And then she goes on about his sons. But all the things she aims at him are political. When he responds to her, all he does is answer her through her sex. You know, he says, 'Tis beauty that doth oft make women proud, but God, he knows, thy share thereof is small. 'Tis virtue doth make them most admired, the contrary doth make thee most wondered at. 'Tis government that makes them seem divine, the want thereof makes thee abominable. O tiger's heart, wrapped in a woman's hide. And so all the things he aims against her is that you are a terrible woman. Women shouldn't be like you. There's no such thing as an ambitious woman. You're a monster. You're a tiger, you know. So I think that argument has been with us forever, that women are meant to be nurturing and loving.
Well, I mean, the 2016 version of that is Nasty Woman, is it not?
Absolutely. Nasty Woman. And thank God, you know, our own beautiful Senator Liz Warren turned it around and said, yes, we are nasty women, and nasty women vote. You know? Yes, and they take their nasty shoes down to the polls.
You know? Vote however their conscience leads them to, yes, for whatever party, yes, they choose, because, you know, yes, we are nonpartisan in our nastiness, I guess.
I know.
But let me ask you, Tina Packer, we've been discussing a lot of a certain group of Shakespeare's plays, right? We've been discussing these very political plays, Henry VI, and then there's the whole Richard series. I mean, remind us about what these plays in particular meant to Shakespeare and to English audiences at the time.
Right. Because the Henry VI plays are the first plays that he writes, and it's all about England not going into civil war again. So he's writing about the fight that was happening 100 years earlier between the Yorkists and the Lancastrians, and how for decades England struggled with civil war and nobody won. And so Elizabeth I is now on the throne, and they're saying, for God's sake, and she sent out troops of players all over the country to talk about civil war, don't identify as a Yorkist or a Lancastrian, please identify as English. Please say we're one nation. Because if you don't, and we start going into two nations, we're never going to be able to say what is best for England. You're only going to say what is best for my side or your side. And we all live in the same space.
She was using, you know, using theatre in the 16th century to unite the English.
Absolutely. And she had the Queen's men who went out on the road, and then one of her chief ministers and, you know, perhaps her lover, the Earl of Leicester, had his troop who was saying the same thing. For God's sake, don't go back into civil war. Can you see how civil war happens? So they were writing about their fear of what England might recede into. And it was very effective. It was enormously effective. And, you know, the Henry VI plays, although we don't do them much, they were the prime money earners in Shakespeare's own day. So it was because it kind of resonated. And, of course, it ends, the play we do all know, with Richard III, which is the violence gets so horrendous. It kills women, children, any innocent bystanders. It's indiscriminate in its violence. And, you know, Richard doesn't care just so long as he keeps on going. And it's the addiction to violence by that time. And you see this all over the Middle East. You see it, you know, in other countries. And you think, please, dear God, how are they going to get out of this?
Mm.
And so I feel that Shakespeare was trying to add his... And, you know, France was, of course, in civil war between the Protestants and the Catholics. So this idea that a country could devolve into civil war was a huge... And I even feel it when we go into the South and the North, you know. And, of course, coming from the outside, I get very... I've been here 40 years now, nearly the 40th anniversary of Shakespeare and Company. But... we get very close to this sometimes. Well, you don't understand us. We're from the South. You don't understand us. You know, you haven't got the right intellectual position
right,
on this.
Right.
So we start bifurcating instead of really trying to say if we've got more money in our state, then we need to help some other states that don't have as much money as we have. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've got to think of ourselves as a total whole, not this North versus South or Black versus white, or any of the racism that you can find in a play like Merchant of Venice, of course, or something like that.
Well, Tina Packer, I mean, you had mentioned Richard III, and
yes,
you're an excellent company in terms of other lovers and scholars of Shakespeare who are thinking of Richard III right now, because Greenblatt wrote in the New York Times that he does compare this election cycle to that play, and he says, you know, it's our own doing, ours being the the collective America, that we have two candidates running for president who are intensely disliked by differing sides, differing versions of the nation. So I want to just again hear a little bit of the actual richness of Shakespeare's dialogue. So we have a bit of Richard III here. This is a moment from a speech that Richard III gives, and here it's read by Ralph Fiennes.
Not knowing how to find the open air, but toiling desperately to find it out, torment myself to catch the English crown. And from that torment, I will free myself or hew my way out with a bloody axe.
I mean, one hopes that we could hear this and avoid the same outcome.
Right, and somebody who's deeply neurotic, if I might say so, actually making their neurosis be the thing that they are going to use to emotionally arouse people and send them off on their way, you know, to do more damage in more places. And it's very frightening, frightening.
It's been absolutely fascinating hearing you talk about how the political plays, the history plays of Shakespeare were these contemporaneous warnings against division between citizens and their fellow citizens. Now, given that, there's one more question I want to ask you, because obviously these lessons are so true for us today.
Yes.
There's one more play which I actually have to say I don't know that well, but that you say has so much resonance today, and that's a play about Thomas More?
Oh, yes, this is the last play. Well, about six playwrights wrote this, and we only have fragments of it left, which is why it's never done. But in fact, it's an extraordinarily, extraordinary play, and the bit that we know Shakespeare wrote, because it's in his own handwriting, is the bit where Thomas More, the Londoners are rioting in the streets. They say, you can't let any more refugees come in over the Channel. You've got to keep them out. And we know that Shakespeare himself lived with refugees for about 8 years, with Huguenots. Those were the Protestant refugees that were coming in from Flanders and France. And then, so Thomas More talks to this angry crowd, and he says, imagine that you see the wretched strangers, they called strangers the immigrants, their babies on their backs, with their poor luggage plodding to the ports and coasts for transportation. He said, what would happen if the king banished you and you went to France or Germany and they turned on you? What would you do? You'll put down the strangers, you'll kill them, you cut their throats, possess their houses, you know. But if the king were to banish you, whither would you go? What country, by the nature of your error, should give you harbor? Go you to France or Flanders, to any German province, Spain or Portugal, nay, anywhere that not adheres to England? Why, you must needs be strangers. Would you be pleased to find a nation of such barbarous temper that breaking out in hideous violence would not afford you an abode on earth, whet their detested knives against your throat, spurn you like dogs? What would you think to be thus used? This is the stranger's case, and this is your mountainous inhumanity. So he spoke out very clearly on the side of the refugees.
You know, and, 4 centuries later, Shakespeare thunders just as loud in our ears.
Just as loud.
Tina Packer, she is founding artistic director of Shakespeare and Company in Lenox. She's author of the book Women of Will. She's been talking to us about how Shakespeare's political observations are as relevant today as they were back in the 16th century. Tina Packer, it is always such a pleasure. Thank you so very, very much.
And come to our 40th season, which is next year. And the beautiful Alan Burrows is heading up the company, and it's going to be stupendous. So everybody should come.
We're looking forward to it. And listeners, by the way, send us a tweet at Radio Boston and tell us what Shakespeare play you're thinking about best represents the 2016 election cycle. Again, that's at Radio Boston. Tina Packer, thanks again.
Thank you.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.